Welcome to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up north Michigan Golf without the drive. As we head on out back to the Jersey Mike's hotline, Jersey Mike's a sub above here on the CDGA Golf Show. Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan with you every single Saturday, talking all things in the world of golf. And now we talk with Golf.com's James Colgan, who's kind enough to spend a part of his morning with us. James, good morning to you, and I know you love that DMB leading you in.
Nothing better to put me in a good mood to talk about my job than to butter me up with some Dave Matthews. So thank you for that, Tyler.
So while I got you on the phone, James, I have to ask the ultimate question from a man that has played some of the greatest courses in the world. If you had one round left, is it at a Masters, Augusta National, or is it at St. Andrews? Because you've played them both.
Oh my gosh! Well, Mike, let me tell you, I've been struggling to properly contextualize the last 10 months of golf for me. This is even by my embarrassingly inflated standards. This has been an insane year for golf. I think if I were picking a true, death row golf round, my selection would have to be Augusta National. It's a place where you can feel the ghosts of golf kind of walking around. St. Andrews is absolutely incredible and is every bit the same level of bucket list experience for golfers. But I think if I'm talking about my last round on this earth, I would have to be thinking about pace of play and that experience. And as far as I understand it, it's very hard to play St. Andrews in less than 4.5-5 hours because of the volume of play on that golf course. I think you can rip around Augusta National in 3.5 and feel very good about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you've got plenty of options out there. I'm a little surprised you didn't go with Drumlins out in Syracuse, but we can discuss that another time. But yeah, looking at what not just St. Andrews and Augusta, but you were in Australia golfing, correct? If I'm remembering correctly here?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you've been everywhere.
I would say Royal Melbourne is very much in the conversation with those two courses. And truthfully, if you made me have to make a decision, it would be a really, really close choice between all three. But Royal Melbourne is every bit as good as either Augusta National or St. Andrews, as far as the history of the game and also just the quality of the golf course. It's really incredible to say that I have seen those things with my own eyes and hacked my way around each of them embarrassingly. But it is a good reminder of the fact that, you know, there is this unifying quality to golf. It is 18 tee boxes and 18 greens, no matter if you're walking around your local muni or you are walking around one of the greatest golf courses on earth. There is a common thread between every piece of that in the game. And if there has been one true piece of gratitude that I've received from having done this, true embarrassment of riches, I feel even uncomfortable speaking about it because of how good some of the golf I played this year has been. If there's one good thing about it, it's that it's reminded me of this absolutely incredible central thread of this sport that sort of pulls us all together. And it is the same whether you're walking around a muni in the middle of America or you are wandering around the coastline of Australia. And that is that's a pretty special thing.
Well, James, we unfortunately are embarking on the end of a season. I mean, we've got two rounds left in what we're considering the PGA Tour regular season. And I'm going to ask you a quick question. Do you think the Tour Championship is, in fact, working? And do you think it's fair?
You know, I'm glad you asked this because I was hoping to come on and discuss my my proposal for the future of the PGA Tour playoffs here.
Well, that was our next question.
I think the current system as it exists is a complete failure to properly prop up the sport of professional golf, and particularly to make the PGA Tour season feel like it's worth anything. I mean, when you think about it, the season started back in January in Hawaii, and the last 8 months have brought us all over the United States and frankly, across the other side of the Atlantic as well. And yet there is no real central thread through that season. That, you know, the same thing I'm speaking about the unifying theory of golf courses, there is not a unifying theory of professional golf at the present moment. And I think a really good way to do that would be to present a playoff structure like the one that exists in every other professional sport right now. Give me some knockout rounds. Let me see some players get removed from the process, and not because of a cut line, not because of their performance in an individual tournament, but because they lost in a match, a proper mano-a-mano match. I think there are a lot of good ways to do this, but the proposal I had laid out is a 70-team bracket that's run just like March Madness in college basketball. You've got a series of sites where players are competing all at the same time adjacent to one another, which makes it slightly more entertaining for golf broadcast purposes, and make sure that the TV sponsors are all placated by the volume of play and the interest of what's going on. And then in addition to that, you've got a series of rounds in which the best players maybe will get a bye through the first or the second round. But as things go on, it's win or go home. Bring yourself through. And at the very end of the PGA Tour season, we could have 2 days of an Elite Eight tournament, Friday and Saturday, or Saturday and Sunday, of which there's four 18-hole matches, and then a 36-hole match to finish things off. It seems like just such a simple and improved way to go about this PGA Tour process. And when you think about it, if you could contextualize Scottie Scheffler's greatness this year, I mean, frankly, everyone should be able to do that. He's won so many times. He's got Olympic gold. He's got a Masters victory. He's got, you know, a half dozen other wins in the PGA Tour. But if you really wanted to contextualize a great season from someone else, it would be really hard to do that in pro golf right now. I think Xander Schauffele would be the only one who you could really make a good case for. But let's say Jordan Spieth goes on a Cinderella run from being the 65th best golfer or 67th best golfer on the PGA Tour to start the FedEx Cup playoffs, and is eventually a guy ranked in the top 70, climbs his way all the way into the finals and wins the FedEx Cup playoffs in a match play, a dramatic match play victory over Scottie Scheffler on Sunday at the Tour Championship. That would be the best way to contextualize a great season on the PGA Tour. That doesn't exist right now. Even Jordan Spieth winning the Tour Championship this week in its current format would look nothing like the sort of defining and clarifying victory that we've seen that we would see under this format. So that is my proposal to fix the PGA Tour playoffs. Make it count, make it matter, and don't be afraid to send some guys home early. That is what makes the rest of professional sports playoffs great, and it is what would greatly improve the PGA Tour product.
James Colgan, golf.com, our guest with us here on the CDGA Golf Show. I love the format that you set up there, but I have one problem with it. And it's that it's not what a golf tournament is. Like, it's fundamentally, to me, I liken it to a soccer game that ends in penalty kicks in like the World Cup or something like that, where all season long you've been playing one format and then you're changing it just for the playoff rounds here. That's my one qualm with it, is that it strays a little bit away from what you've been doing all year long.
Well, the only point I will make in counter to that is take a look at what we have rolling with the Ryder Cup and with the President's Cup every year. Come September, I am thrilled to be seeing a different style of golf than the 72-hole and 54-hole slogs that I have been witnessing for the previous 8 months. I am so excited to see some sort of variety and some sort of change. And by the way, I think that's some of the most interesting and entertaining golf that we see all year, is match play style and team play style golf. I think implementing something like this in the PGA Tour, yes, it's a different thing and it benefits a different style of player maybe, but who are we to say that stroke play is necessarily the best way to define a great golfer. You know, there are plenty of great players who have built their careers and their legacies on the success that they've had in team play tournaments and in match play tournaments, and not necessarily in stroke play events. And if you're looking for a way to define the greatest golfers in the style that we've seen the rest of professional golf, I've got good news for you, Tyler. We already have that. We have the major championship. That is how we play, the way that stroke play works. That's how we figure out the winners of the golf season every year. The problem with the PGA Tour playoffs is they don't know how to manage this. They've tried all these, you know, broken and sideways ways of fixing the problem. But the problem is they don't have any way of incentivizing the interest the way that the major championships do, or frankly, the way that they do at some of the better tournaments that they play throughout the year. This would be a way to do that in my mind. And I think the biggest question about it, the biggest concern for it, doesn't really have to do with the change of format so much as it has to do with the change in business structure. When we talk about this stuff with the PGA Tour, the reason why they haven't gone to a match play format more frequently is that it's a very hard sell for sponsors and for TV broadcasters, because when you think about it, if there's only one match on the golf course at a time, that means there's a tremendous amount less golf for the broadcasters to show. There's a tremendous amount more interruptions and commercials, and it makes it just a much less enjoyable viewer experience. That is the reason why we haven't seen this happen. But in my proposal, if you were paying attention closely, you'll notice I brought up several different concurrent events happening at the same time on TV. I think that's the best way to fix it. Just have a few sites running matches all day long, every day. I think it would make for a March Madness style level of entertainment. And if you could get golf fans to buy in for something like that, the way that sports fans buy in for March Madness every year, that would be such an unbelievable victory for the PGA Tour, which, as far as I see it right now, does not have a defining event.
Well, and, you know, and I love the idea as well. The only questions I might have under your scenario is, what happens if you have a series of 16s beating the ones, and then I with March Madness, they play under a certain amount of time. But these guys, if they start beating each other, then what time is left in the telecast could be just dead time. And I just wonder if the sponsors would go for such a
thing. Well, I think too, off of that point, if you do have a quote-unquote tournament-style format, that makes the time at the desk. Like, for me personally, when I'm watching a golf tournament, the breakdown and the cover, like, when you're not showing me golf shots, I'm largely disinterested. But I feel like if you have a tournament format and you're breaking down a bracket and, like, what has to happen here and there, that's interesting to me. And I think that would bring an element to golf that I think is missing right now.
Yeah, I would
agree. And also, I would make the point too. I definitely am sympathetic to the thought of, well, what happens if the stars all lose, and what happens if it's just not interesting for as much time as we were hoping it to be. My only counterpoint to that would be, if Scottie Scheffler wins by 10 shots this weekend, that's not a very interesting golf tournament come Sunday anyway. And even if that's resulting in star victory, it's not compelling. It's not drawing in a TV audience. And for the most part, we'll have been able to decide that by the time we all go to bed tonight, that he's going to win this tournament. So I think the suggestion that we're in this place where, the stars are always winning on the PGA Tour and this is their way of propping them up, I think it's mostly fabricated. I don't necessarily see that coming to fruition in the day-to-day existence of the current PGA Tour. So, yes, that is certainly a risk of a new system, is that you'll wind up having a Final Four with, you know, Denny McCarthy and Brian Harman battling it out for golf supremacy. But I think that's something that, you know, you have to be able to lean into, and you have to be willing to lean into. And I think especially when you look at what the PGA Tour is struggling with right now, I mean, we've been having all these conversations about falling TV ratings and the ways that the PGA Tour is trying to fix its television program. The reality is there are so many inherent issues with the way the PGA Tour is running its business. And of those issues, probably the biggest one is the fact that it is not interesting or substantive to golf fans in a way where they feel like they have to tune in to follow what's going on in the sport, to have a sense of what's going on in the sport. They feel like they could tune in for the four major weeks a year and the Ryder Cup and call it a year. And you know what? I wouldn't necessarily disagree with them. I don't think the PGA Tour has done a good enough job of advancing the cause of golf in their week-to-week and day-to-day tournaments. I think this would be a way to do that and to give a real, real sense of substance to the way that their season is ending every year. That every year when we reach this point of Labor Day weekend and we're talking about the FedEx Cup playoffs and the Tour Championship, I mean, I work in golf, and I am half interested by the time we reach here. If we had something that changed the world and changed the way that we were looking at our tournaments, I think it would make a considerable improvement to the overall product.
I think too, and to your earlier point about like you could maybe get a lackluster matchup in the championship. You can get that in any sport, right?
Sure.
Like how many times do we see the Cowboys bow out early? And sorry to bring up a sore subject, but how many times do we see your New York Yankees, James, bow out early in the playoffs? And like a couple years ago, March Madness, all the one seeds were knocked out very early on. So it's the risk you run in any sort of playoff elimination type sport, but usually, more often than not, you will get the best of the best there in those final stages. I do want to shift.
Absolutely.
If you've got anything else left to add to that. Otherwise, I'm ready to shift some gears to the Ryder Cup at a place that I know is very near and dear to your heart, Bethpage Black. Keegan Bradley is coming on really strong here at the end of this year, won the BMW last week, and he is your new captain. Do you think we will see a player captain as a member of the United States Ryder Cup team?
So I do not think we'll see a player captain as a result of the Ryder Cup. And the reason why I think that is because if Keegan Bradley winds up making this team, and the only way he'd make the team, he said already, is if he automatically qualifies, which means he finishes in the top six of points getters for the Ryder Cup over the 2 years, starting with 2023, 2024 and into 2025. If Keegan makes the team as an automatic qualifier, I believe he will bow out as the captain and pick someone else to take on the big role of deciding the matchups and deciding the tournament. I don't say that as any sort of slight to Keegan, more so than I've just had a lot of conversations with people in the golf world over the last couple of weeks and months about this captainship. And so many people have explained to me just how difficult it is to sort of manage the role of being a Ryder Cup captain during the tournament week. I was having a conversation. I'm forgetting if this was who this was with actually, but it was with a former Ryder Cupper, and he said to me, "I wouldn't even consider being a playing captain for the Ryder Cup." He said he'd been asked to do it, and he said it was a crazy idea. I wouldn't even think about it because of how much it would take out of the week of the tournament, and how much it would really distract his ability to be the best possible captain he could be. I think especially given the way that we have seen Keegan take over this team, for those who weren't paying attention, Tiger Woods was long expected as the Ryder Cup captain, and then very late in the process, because of the negotiations between the PGA Tour and the Saudi PIF, Tiger went to the PGA of America and said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I don't think I have the time to do this." And so the PGA of America pivoted to Keegan pretty late in the game. Because of the fact that all of that happened, I could very easily see Keegan, if he makes this team, just stepping aside and picking someone else. I described it the other day as like golf's version of a contested convention, because everyone would be running around angling for their chance to be a U.S. Ryder Cup team captain, despite very, very little resume work to deserve quite being there. So it would be a fascinating situation if that happened, but I think it's very, very unlikely we'll ultimately see Keegan Bradley as a playing captain.
Well, James, I would agree with you, having been a part of five Ryder Cups myself and noticing the job of a captain. I know Palmer could do it back in the 60s, but the type of responsibility and the optics on you as a captain, I just don't see it ending well for a playing captain in this era of Ryder Cup. But this year, we don't have a Ryder Cup. We have a President's Cup at the end of September. And I would have wanted to ask you, what do you think Captain Furyk's going to pick, and what do you think Captain Weir's going to do as it relates to his Canadian friends?
Yeah, you know, this is a fascinating thing, because this conversation about rosters for the President's Cup leads back to kind of a bigger conversation about what the role of the President's Cup is supposed to be in the state of professional golf currently. I think when this tournament was initially conceived, the idea was that it would give the Americans a way to play in a team tournament in the years in which they were not competing in a Ryder Cup. It would improve their Ryder Cup preparation. It would improve their team cohesiveness and their knowledge of one another, and it would put them in a better place to succeed come Ryder Cup time. Well, the reality is, as time has sort of borne out, this tournament is not necessarily the most competitive from year to year. The Americans have won, I believe, all but one of the President's Cups in existence. There has been, you know, a just general shift, I would say, towards viewing this as maybe, you know, a pretty clear second-class citizen of the team events in golf. And so then there's a secondary conversation about, you know, which players even want to be involved with it. And especially now with LIV and the fact that, you know, there are guys on the Ryder Cup team that won't even be considered for the President's Cup team because they're not allowed. It really does add a whole other layer to this stuff. I mean, we saw Jordan Spieth announce that he was going to get season-ending surgery rather than compete in the President's Cup. And I think that that kind of tells you everything you need to know about the importance of the rosters in the eyes of some of the people involved. And then I think when you look at it from the international side, right now there's a big conversation about, well, the tournament's being held in Montreal, and the you know, captain is Mike Weir, Canadian, and so how many Canadians is he going to pick to the roster? But we forget that the initial reasoning for starting this matchup was to advance the cause of international golf, and particularly to turn the international team into a development program for international golf talent. I don't necessarily know that we've seen that in a really cohesive way, with the exception of Ernie Els and then later Trevor Immelman's captaincies over these last 4 years. I just don't think we've gotten enough of that from the international side. And my guess would be, to eventually here answer your question, is that I think there's going to be a heavy emphasis on the Canadians on the roster side. I don't think there's going to be a lot of emphasis on roster development from the American side. I think it's going to be more about, all right, let's give some guys who have had good seasons on the PGA Tour their due. Let them play for the Stars and Stripes and, you know, see if maybe anyone establishes themselves as being some sort of match play darling in the way that Max Homa did back in 2022 in Charlotte, that ultimately led to him being on the Ryder Cup team in 2023 in Rome. So that, I think, is the way that the rosters will ultimately shake out. That's not name specific so much as it is general orientation and strategy specific. But from every conversation I've had amongst people in the golf world, that seems to be where things are headed.
All right, James. James Colgan from golf.com, by the way, with us here on the CDGA Golf Show. Before we let you go, LIV and the PGA Tour, are we close?
I would say at the present moment, no. I don't think there's really any motivation right now on either side to be keeping things moving forward. Of course, any of that can change in a moment. And as we've learned time and time again, you know, it's very hard to take anyone really at their word when they discuss these things. But the fact of the matter is, you know, when we heard from PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan in March at the Players Championship, we were all sort of in agreement that we were hoping to hear that some legitimate steps and advancement in the conversations with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And as we have now reached the end of the PGA Tour season at the Tour Championship, we've just heard from Jay Monahan again, and there has not been a single step forward or concrete path towards clarity that we've heard from anyone involved in the time since then. And that's, you know, that's been 5 months now between those two tournaments. I just don't think that there's enough motivation on either side to get this done. And honestly, more than that, I don't think there's enough really reason for them to do it. I mean, I think right now the lines are pretty clearly drawn. I don't think that the PGA Tour is at risk of running out of business in the next couple of years. And I don't think that LIV is really looking to go anywhere either. I mean, I think the only things that could really push us in the direction of fundamentally changing the state of negotiations right now would be if the PGA Tour's TV ratings took another massive drop off in the next 12 months, or if the PIF decided to start withdrawing some of its investment from LIV and letting some of the players that they had originally signed to these massive signing bonuses walk and letting them go back to the PGA Tour. I think it's going to take some sort of fundamental shift to the way that the landscape of pro golf looks right now for either of these sides to feel motivated to come together and fix things. And I think my only real hope as a fan of golf is that whatever the outcome is, that it does wind up bringing together the best players in the sport together more frequently, because I don't think there's any argument that while all of this was supposed to improve professional golf, and, you know, we saw Greg Norman, the commissioner of LIV, go on social media yesterday and take a nice long victory parade for his 3 years as commissioner. I mean, I think the reality is there's very few people who would argue that professional golf is in a better place today than it was 3 years ago. I think professional golfers have made a ton of money as a result of it, but I think the sport has taken a massive drop off as a result. And I really hope that we do fix that, because frankly, it is less enjoyable and the business is hurting as a result of it. And no matter how much everyone involved is trying to put on a happy face and laugh it off, that is the reality. That is what is happening behind closed doors. And so I am hopeful that we will see some sort of resolution at some point in the future, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Well, hopefully there's something that comes on the horizon by the time we talk to you next year. James, appreciate the time. Best of luck the rest of the year, and enjoy your end of season, whatever whereabouts you've got going on once the season's over.
Yeah, I think it's time for me to do some sleeping, but thank you guys so much. It's always such a blast to come on this show. I'm very, very grateful that you've elicited my sometimes stupid analysis more often than not over these last couple of years. So thank you guys both.
You can never go wrong with a good old-fashioned bracket. James, appreciate the time.
Thanks, James.
We will talk to you hopefully soon or maybe
see
next
you soon.
Year. It's James Colgan on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above. This segment has been brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive. I do want to hear about your match at Tullamore.
Oh, yeah.
From last week against the Golf Association of Michigan. So all that coming up next right here on the CDGA Golf Show.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Tour Edge. Mike, you were up at Tullamore last week. You did the show up there as well.
Yeah.
And did the CDGA come away victorious
in
their match against the Golf Association of Michigan?
The final score was the CDGA members 31.5 to the Golf Association of Michigan, who had 16.5. And it was so much fun, though. It was true Ryder Cup spirit. A lot of friendships were made and just a lot of fun. And I got to tell you, the highlight, I think, of the whole thing was this modified scramble event that we played after the first 2 days of four ball were in the books. The Tullamore did us a favor. They closed off one of the nines and they let us play an 18-some.
Wow.
We had two beverage carts that followed along.
You need it.
You need it. And the idea is you put one ball in play, it's a modified scramble, and you try to get your ball to the green and the fewest number of players in shots used so that all the players who come to the green have a shot at making the putt. So in other words, our team of nine against their team of nine, you only get one shot per hole, and that's even if you need it. Mm-hmm. So long story short, the CDGA and GAM had a match, and on the very first hole, because I played for the GAM team because of numbers and evenness, but the CDGA ended up making a bogey using all their players, so they were penalized a shot and made double bogey to our birdie on the first hole. Fast forward to the ninth hole, CDGA goes on a birdie barrage, and we're on the final hole, and both teams with their first players drive the ninth green. We make the eagle putt, they make birdie, and GAM ended up winning. But it was so fun. And then singles were all day Sunday, and it was halfway through where we finally clinched. And at the end of the day, we all had lunch, had a great time, and we vowed that everybody wants to come back, and we're going to expand the teams to 12 players each. So any CDGA members that want to take this trip with us, stay tuned, because that opportunity to play for the Tullamore Cup next fall will be out there. So the GAM folks want revenge, and we're willing to come back and let him have at it. But we now retain the Tullamore Cup.
All right, CDGA.org if you want to sign up and become a member, and you can get awesome perks like this and go on a trip like that. All right, when we come back, John Rahm spoke this week, and it involved everything that's taking place up at Bolingbrook and the LIV Individual Golf Championships. That's all coming up next. We'll play that for you in a couple of minutes here on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment has been brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan on the CDGA Golf Show with you. Talking golf every single Saturday morning. You miss anything? Check us out on the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. Download that ESPN Chicago app and you can take us on the go wherever you go. And you can find the podcast there as well, the CDGA Golf Show tab, or you can find us wherever you get your podcast. All right, the LIV Golf Individual Championships coming up. About 2 weeks from now, as they'll tee it up out at Bolingbrook Golf Club. And John Rahm was speaking with the media about 2 weeks ago discussing this event and his preparation as he gears up to tee it up out in Bolingbrook.
Hasn't changed at all. I try to prepare every week to perform my best, you know, regardless of where I'm at in any rankings or anything. Every time I tee it up, the goal is to win, and that doesn't really change.
With the individual championship on the line, does the format add any extra pressure or excitement for you, and how do you handle that?
I mean, I think the pressure's always there. It's a little extra motivation as well, but I think all that comes into play Sunday if you have a chance, right? All depends on what the point distribution is, so I have to play this week to give myself a decent chance and come in Chicago.
And lastly, fans are always excited to see you play. How important is fan support to you, and what message do you have for those coming out to watch the tournament in Bolingbrook Golf Club?
Well, having a good fan base on a tournament is always good, right? Having the crowd out there makes it more exciting for them, which makes it more exciting for us. And it's just, in return, usually I would say it transforms into better golf, right? So I'd encourage everybody in Chicago to come on and watch. It's a great atmosphere. It's good golf. And being in the last tournament individually, I think you might see some really good performances that week.
Yeah, it's going to be probably one of the more anticipated LIV events, especially on the heels of what we've seen with Bryson this year and his major success, including the U.S. Open win. John Rahm, even though he struggled this year, he started to pick it up as of late at the Olympics and at the Open Championship, he played a lot better, too. And now he's wrapping up his LIV season on a high note. So there's that. There's potentially Phil's last events.
Maybe.
We'll see. But, yeah, it's been – and then, obviously, you'll have guys like Brooks and Cam Smith, Terrell Hatton, and Joaquin Neiman. So there's plenty of firepower that's coming to Bolingbrook. And for these individual championships here at the end – I think it's going to be a lot more intriguing, and you look at the location of it with Bolingbrook, a little more central to the Chicago area, a little bit of a easier drive than before at Rich Harvest. I think that there should be a pretty good turnout out at Bolingbrook in a couple weeks.
I think it's going to be actually a wonderful turnout. I've never been asked more if I've got tickets, am I going, or that I've heard people who have purchased tickets. You know, John Rahm right now is number one on the LIV as an individual. Hard to believe. We said that, you know, he didn't come out and just dominate and win, but he does have seven top fives out of 11 starts. And in his 11 starts, he's never finished worse than within the top 10. So he may have only won once, but I think part of this has also been a process for him to get comfortable in this move. I mean, it's easy to say, oh yeah, he took the money and all the rest of it, but he still mentally had to deal with change. And it's an enormous change, and a change that doesn't come easy and doesn't come quick. But I think what's happened is he's grown more and more comfortable with the move, especially now having a chance to compete with some of his fellow players. But as it relates back to Bolingbrook and the event that's coming on, for Chicagoans who wants to see some star power, if you want to take a look at the top 10 individuals that live right now, to go right down it, you bet Rahm, Joaquin Neiman, Tyrell Hatton, Sergio Garcia, Louis Oosthuizen, Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, Dean Burmester, Bryson DeChambeau, Taylor Gooch, Dustin Johnson's just outside. How about those names? I bet you recognize almost every single one of them, maybe except for Dean. But aside from that, there's going to be a lot of great golf being played out at Bolingbrook. So while you may not agree with how LIV, you know, came about and what they're doing, if you just love to see good golf, go on out to Bolingbrook. You're going to have an opportunity to be closer to these guys than you ever would at a PGA Tour or at a U.S. Open PGA Championship, for sure. So if you've got young ones who want to understand this game, get to know it, and fall in love with it, bring them out to the practice range. Bring them out and watch how these guys prepare as teams. They go all out together. The thing starts like a football game rather than just sort of bleeding out a group, then another group, then another group. So the difference is, for those who don't quite understand what a shotgun start is, they're all going to start at the same time, like the buzzer goes off. So LIV also brings an amazing amount of entertainment also to these events. Events that are outside the events. And, you know, we talked about it with
Adam Harder.
Bubba. And Bubba with the goats. I mean, they do things, they think outside the box. Now, do they have to? Sure they do, to compete against this, you know, monster called the PGA Tour. But seriously, professional golf is coming to Chicago. If you really want to expose the young folks in your family to an amazing experience, take them out there, because there's a lot to do away from the golf course that can be engaging in certain aspects of golf, but there's also non-golf activities for truly the non-golfer in the family. But it is a different vibe and a different atmosphere than your typical golf tournament. So if you've never given professional golf a chance, try it.
Well, and because on top of that, too, the way that the PGA Tour has largely neglected the Chicagoland area over the past, what, 5 years?
A lot of years.
I mean, the BMW's been here a couple times recently, but that's about it.
Yeah, but that's a little more WGA than that's PGA.
True. That's true, yeah.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the WGA being here, I'm not so sure Chicago would be as as user-friendly for them.
Despite the fact that there are plenty of courses that certainly are suitable for an event like that as well. So
it's
something that if you want to see some of the best, especially this season, I think it's one of the best opportunities that you're going to have to go out and see some of the best players in the entire field.
So. Yeah, and next year we're not going to have any professional golf other than LIV. We're going to have to wait.
Assuming
till
that
26.
They come back here, right?
Yeah. But I think they are.
Yeah, they've certainly made this a focal point.
Yeah, and speaking with Adam, he reiterated the importance of the Chicago market to LIV.
Yeah.
So I think that eventually the business model for LIV will be fewer events in the United States, more worldwide, but I think Chicago will always have a stop.
Yep. All right, when we come back, we will go around the CDGA. This segment has been brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
Thank you to Justin Pottinger for producing today's show. This segment brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Before we go around the CDGA, Mike, I do want to remind everybody that Glenview Park Golf Club this fall is having a fantastic special where you can get a foursome for just $199.95. So that's $50 ahead, $199.95. All you got to do, call the golf shop right now, 847-724-0250. That's 847-724-0250. Mention the CDGA Golf Show, and you'll also get a dozen golf balls as well. This includes a cart, by the way. So you get the foursome, a cart, and a dozen golf balls for $50 a person, $199.95 for the whole foursome there.
That is absolutely unbelievable. And folks, if you've never played there, now is the time to do it.
I will be there tomorrow for a later afternoon round, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and again, check it out, Glenview Park. It's all that and a bag of chips. And when you go on up there, tell Ron Cassidy we say hello, but do mention the CDGA Golf Show and pay accordingly. But going around the CDGA, did you know on this day in golf, Patrick Harrington and Charles Schwartzel were actually born? But what's actually funny is in 1987, on this same day, Curtis Strange set the all-time golf earnings record, $697,000. And I think, you know, last is getting $550 or something this week. So that goes to show you just how much this game
Scotty's caddy might make that this week.
I know. They might start tipping that amount soon. Anyway, congrats to Captain Eric Ciotti and the team CDGA, as we mentioned earlier, for posting an impressive win over GAM last weekend up at Tullymore Resort, taking the inaugural Tullymore Cup 31.5 to 16.5. Excellent golf was played. Friendships were made as we had more fun than the law should allow. Next year's plans are already in the works, so go to CDGA.org throughout the year, and we'll be keeping you abreast as the opportunities to travel with us around the pond over to Tullymore next year. Congratulations to our 2024 Illinois State Mid-Am champion, Andrew Price from Lake Bluff, a former winner of this event 10 years ago, finds the magic at Itasca Country Club, winning by 2 shots at 5 under over Michael Mounts from El Paso, Illinois, and Daniel Stringfellow from Roselle. So congratulations, Andrew Price. And another congratulations to all the teams in the various flights for winning the inaugural Veterans Golf Series that climaxed at Aurora Country Club this past Monday. A very successful first season for those men and women who served our country. And World Long Putt Regionals are next Saturday at Midwest Golf House, home of the CDGA. And there is one last qualifier that's happening at Belmont Golf Course in Downers Grove. It's at 2 p.m. this Wednesday. Show up, and you'll putt to 3 different holes. They'll take your 6 putts at each hole. They take your best 4, and then they measure those distances. And those with the shortest distances, I believe the top 3 will be going up to Kohler for the finals. They'll come to the regionals, and then the 3 finalists from our regional will go on up to Kohler. Now, what's interesting is this world long putt, Jay Stocky.
Yeah.
We chatted with him, but get this. He had past tense the world record. It's been broken.
Oh, wow.
So the good guys broke it. 464 feet.
You know, I think I saw that it was recently, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was just a few weeks ago. So guess what? They're going to try to break it again. And if you qualify and go up there, you're going to have a chance, too, to get after trying to break and put yourself in the Guinness Book of World Records. I guess the baths at Kohler have a putting green, and they can go out to over 600 feet.
So, you just got to beat the daylight.
Yeah, so now Good and Jay are going back and forth now who's going to be breaking the record. So a lot of good stuff. So 2 p.m. Belmont Golf Club this Wednesday. If you want to try to get in for that finals at the end of September up at Kohler. So with that, that's about all that's going on. But have a great week and play well tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you very much. Everyone else, enjoy the rest of their long Labor Day weekends here, as it's one of the best golfing weekends of the year. We will be back with you next week, 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, right here on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Peggy and Dion coming up next. We'll talk to you next week.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.